Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, Colson. How are you doing?
Good.
Great. So thank you so much for agreeing to speak with me today. I'm so happy you could talk to us.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So today we're going to talk about Donald Trump, but before we get into the meat of the conversation, do you want to just briefly introduce yourself to the listeners? Maybe talk a little bit about your family and religious background.
Sure. My name is Kolsom Grossman, formerly Kolsom Lalani, before I got married in 2015. And I grew up in Weston, Connecticut, a tiny little town in southern Connecticut. And I met Janie in eighth grade. You were 13 years old. And so I grew up in this town, pretty much very little diversity in that town. And my family is from Pakistan, and my family is all Muslim. I grew up Muslim as well, and pretty much the only Pakistani or Muslim family in the entire town. And so, I grew up around very, all Americanized people, very either Christian or Jewish, and who lived a very abundant lifestyle. And to me, that was my normal. I, was born and raised in the same house on the same street for 18 years. And so, I kind of just became a product of my environment there. I didn't question a lot of things as kind of like most teenagers. I just tried to get through life, get through school, kind of as unharmed as possible, and kind of just get through those years. And then in 2013, I moved to Arizona to be with my now husband, then boyfriend. And I've been in Arizona for 3.5 years. I absolutely love it here. So it's been in a wild and fun but interesting journey so far.
Great, thank you. And you are a fairly hardcore conservative, right?
I would say so. I mean, I've met more hardcore, so
Of course, of course.
but I am pretty right leaning on most issues. Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about how you came to that realization after growing up in Connecticut?
Yeah, definitely. So as I kind of mentioned, when growing up, I was definitely not a very analytical or introspective person. I really did not spend a lot of time really thinking about the world or thinking about life or who I was and what the world was all about. So it wasn't really until I moved to Arizona, really started my own life, moved away from home permanently for the first time, across the country, and really was on my own completely. Well, with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, but learning how to pay all your bills alone for the first time, becoming an adult, joining the workforce, buying a house, getting married, all these, very adult-like things. It really wasn't until I was out of the environment that I always knew that I really began to kind of search for answers. And so there's a lot of things I think I kind of realized, a few conversations I had over lunch with friends of ours, just kind of pitching into the conversation, where my husband would look at me and say, "Really? You feel like that?" And I would say, "Yeah." And he was like, "That's a very Republican view of you." And I kind of realized that inherently some of my personal beliefs were actually very conservative. And so I kind of, over time, I realized that, the way that I saw the world, the way that I kind of approached, fiscal, financial matters in my own personal life, but also how I view government and our country and national security and all these big things that go into the political realm, I just kind of realized that I really am more of a conservative person than I ever realized. And I think growing up in Connecticut, very blue state, I think, to an extent, I think it's also somewhat fashionable to be liberal, and I didn't really realize that. But I was kind of a product of my environment in that sense too, that everyone around me, most people were very liberal when it came to social matters and also a lot of, fiscal issues. And so I kind of just adopted those as my own to I became older, moved out on my own, and really started forming my own opinions. And I'm realizing that I definitely am more of a conservative than anything else. And during that time, I also, you know, questioned my faith. I went from Muslim to being a Christian. I found the Lord last year. So it's been a really interesting kind of personal, but really awesome journey.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. And, we have been friends, as you said, for the last 12 years, coming on 13 very soon. And as you know, I am probably one of the biggest feminists and liberals that I know, and probably, you know, too.
Yep.
So, you know, this has been obviously a very trying time the last few months for friendships that have gone across party lines and relationships even. So what do you think has allowed our friendship to persist pretty, like, completely undamaged when so many others have failed?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been really sad to see a lot of, you know, people's friendships and relationships and, you know, work friendships and all of the above just be really strained and sometimes fall apart because of what's happening in the political landscape of our country. I think with us, you know, we have been through so much together. I think we went through what I would consider was, you know, the hardest time of my life together. So far. So, you know, those really trying teenage years, and for me it was especially difficult just being from another cultural background and my family being different and really trying to fit in, and just went through a really hard time. And I think, you know, you were always there for me. We always, you know, were there for each other through everything we went through from eighth grade all the way through college. And that says a lot. I think that we really built a strong foundation for our friendship. And when you have a foundation that strong, it's really difficult for external factors to, you know, put cracks or break that foundation. And so I think in our relationships with those that we love right now, it's really important to make sure that we have built a strong foundation so that, you know, things like political opinions and, you know, external forces of the world don't break, you know, the emotional bond, the intellectual bond that you have with those that are important to you. And I think, unfortunately, but, you know, it's just the reality that the relationships have broken because of this election. Mm-hmm. And I think that says two things. I think first, it says that this election is unlike any other. It is bringing about so many more tensions and emotions and issues and things that just have never really come up that deeply in a political election before. And secondly, you know, some of the relationships that have fallen apart, I would, you know, humbly ask that those people question the strength of those relationships, because, you know, if, you know, and it's not a bad thing, it doesn't say anything bad about those, that person. Mm-hmm. It just means, you know, are you building relationships in your life that can really weather tough, difficult situations? And sometimes you're going to lose friends, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And, you know, it's sad to see, but I think it comes down to, you know, really, really loving people for who they are and realizing we're all part of the same human race. And it's difficult to swallow when there's a lot of political tension going on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with all of that. And I would also add that what I think is so interesting and refreshing in a way about our friendship is that, you know, most of the friendships I know that cross party lines or relationships are under one of two conditions. Basically, they either, one or both of them doesn't care enough about politics for it to matter that much. Like, it's not that important to either of them. Or
right.
B, that they just don't talk about it. And neither of those things are true with us. You know, we are both very passionate about at least some political opinions that we hold dear, like sometimes different issues, but a lot of the same issues as well. And we also do talk about it, not all the time, obviously, but we do talk about it, and it doesn't hurt our friendship. So I think that
right.
just like is very unusual. And I think it just comes out of this very like, it, you know, it like obviously political opinions are moral opinions. So like it, I understand why it's hard for a lot of people, but it's just like, I think it's just about Yeah, like it's about our history together, and it's about how we love each other as people. And even when, and I think we've just always had such different values that we always just sort of accept that we're coming from very different value systems. And that, yeah, and that, and then when it comes to friendships, like especially old friendships, but really all friendships, just any friendship that you declare true loyalty to somebody, you, it's not hard to accept somebody who thinks the same way as you. And you can obviously have moral objections to things that like your friends say, and it doesn't mean that you love them any less because you're never going to have all of the same moral opinions as another person.
No, that's a really good point.
Yeah, great. So you, and, oh, and I would also add that just for context that, you know, we also both, I mean, maybe you a little bit less because of the outcome, but I also took the election very personally, you know, like as you know, like you know, I was like a mess the night of the election. I was up at 3 in the morning crying, and you know, my boyfriend woke up after falling asleep during the returns, was like, oh my God, what happened? And you know, I was like up talking to people on the phone who were also upset, and for 2 weeks I was like a basket case and like crying any little thing. So yeah, so but we still managed to have a friendship in spite of our differences, which I think is a really great thing. So
Definitely.
yes, you voted for Donald Trump.
Yes. Oh, yes, there's
yes,
that.
there's that. So yes, can you just tell us just a general summary about your reasons for voting for Donald Trump?
Definitely. So, really, I think a lot of it, I'll just preface with saying I do not think he's the greatest person ever, and I would never even try to argue that he's the most moral person, he's the kindest person, or the most self-aware. I don't, I would never try and defend his, personality or his moral value system in any way. I don't think any of us know him personally enough to be able to speak to that. But I think for me, at the end of the day, it was pretty simple. I want conservative laws. And so when it came down to the election, and I'll tell you, Donald Trump was not my first, second, third, fourth, fifth, or even sixth choice in the election. I was, a Scott Walker girl, then I was a Rubio girl, and it went through a lot with all the candidates that the Republican Party had in their running. But at the end of the day, it came down to, Clinton and Trump. And I think, for me personally, it was a simple choice. I want conservative laws, and in order to have conservative laws, Supreme Court justices, since they're often lifetime appointments. And I think it really came down to that logical piece for me, who was going to replace Scalia. And so, at the end of the day, I would definitely put my faith in Donald Trump to elect, a conservative person, to that seat as he has. And I think so far he pretty much has, fulfilled or stayed loyal to a lot of his campaign promises. And so I think, that's what it came down to for me. I want tax reform. I want a sound immigration system, a sound immigration policy that's actually enforced by our country. I want to see economic prosperity again. I want to see more jobs coming back to the United States. I want to see, stricter laws on crime. I want to see, stricter laws that are actually being enforced when it comes to immigration. I want to just see overall more conservative sounds policy. And so for me, that's really what it came down to. And I had my faith in Trump that he would, fulfill those promises of, bringing jobs back to the country, building a wall, so that we actually have country a line for our country. And a lot of the, convictions he had about, just border security, jobs, and, a lot of fiscal issues, tax reform. So for me, it was a simple choice overall, to vote for him.
Great. So you mentioned that you wouldn't defend his moral character, and you know, I have I'm a bit of two minds about this. You know, I think that in a certain sense, we can't look to a politician's personal life. You know, I think it's frankly a little silly when we start looking into things like infidelity. You know, I think that that, you know, that that's across the board. It's just people, basically. I mean, you know, like male, female, Republican, Democrat, like you don't understand what's going on in somebody else's marriage. You have no idea if they have come to an agreement. You know, like it's just that to me is silly. Like when personal, I think that
right.
some moral objections to politicians, including Donald Trump, are legitimate because there's good reason to believe that they will bleed into both business, because he was a businessman longer than he was a politician, and
right.
the way he'll run the country. So,
right.
So I think, you know, people were concerned that he wouldn't defend oppressed groups or would oppress them even more than they have been oppressed and undo all of the progress that they have made. So what do you have to say about that?
I mean, so just, I think, as far as, I don't think that voting for Donald Trump was a bad choice morally. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that is just because there's nothing morally wrong with voting for a flawed candidate. And I do think he has flaws, just as all of us do. All people have flaws, and all political candidates have flaws. But there's nothing morally wrong with voting for a flawed candidate if you think that he's going to do more good for the country than bad, or more good for his country than his opponent. And that's really where I stood with it, is that, you know, I truly believe to the core of my being that he would do more good for this country than his opponent. And I could, you know, sleep peacefully at night, truly understanding and believing that with my heart, my mind. It was a very clear thing to me. So, you know, I do think that he can be egotistical. I do mm-hmm. think he lacks nuance and tact in a lot of his statements. And I think he, you know, he does sometimes blurt out mistaken ideas that he, you know, later has to abandon. But, you know, he can insult people he can be very vindictive when people attack him. He attacks right back tenfold, you know, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't say anything different than that. But at the end of the day, I think that a lot of the accusations that have been made against him are unjustified. I think that a lot of the many years of his business conduct has shown that he's not racist. He's not legal immigrant. He's not misogynistic. He's not anti-Semitic. I think his actions show that. And I think that a lot of these, you know, unjust magnifications are being portrayed by, you know, the hostile press. I think that at the end of the day, I do think he's a deeply patriotic, you know, man who sincerely wants the best for this country. And I think that, you know, it's really hard. I think, you know, he's made some difficult statements that I don't agree mm-hmm. with, but at the end of the day, I think we all have. I think if the greatest person that you could, you know, the most, if you think of the most moral person that you know, if someone followed that person around with cameras day in and day out for years and years and years, and took, you know, certain clips of things that he said in low moments of their life, I think you can make anyone out to be a demon. You know, I think that at the end of the day, Donald Trump has raised remarkable children. Many who have known him personally can speak of his kindness and his thoughtfulness and his generosity. So at the end of the day, I would call him a good candidate with flaws. And, you know, I think all of us have flaws, and he definitely has his. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's, you know, I think that he is fit to be president.
Okay. Okay. So there's a lot to unpack here. I would say, first of all, that I don't agree with you that – I do agree with you that if you followed someone around for the rest of their life – for their entire lives, even if they were very moral, you would find something that was out of character. However, I do not believe that if you followed anyone around for their entire lives that you would find something misogynistic or racist, at least not overtly. I mean, everyone obviously is – indirectly racist through assumptions and things like that, and indirectly sexist through assumptions. But to say things like, oh, women, you need to treat them like shit, or, you know, you need to grab their pussies because they like it because you're important, you know, that I don't think you would find many men saying that, even if you, unless you know, they're, unless it's the particularly bad ones that you're following around in the locker rooms. But most of the people I know would never speak about other people that way in that disrespectful manner. Like, they just never would. Like, my mother, you know, my sister, like most moral people I know, they would never speak about anybody else that way, and not even the most moral men that I know. And it's always very sad to me when people say that, because I always think, you know, what do people think about their husbands and their brothers and their fathers if they really think that this is how all men speak and behave? And second of all, I know that, so, you know, I won't try to convince you that statements are not just statements, because I know that that's more my value system than yours. You know, that's more of a social justice advocate way of thinking. And I know that you and many other Trump supporters believe that actions speak louder than words, and that while people on my side of the aisle generally believe that statements reveal a value system and that they contribute to discrimination in the world. But just assuming that that's not even true, you know, so leaving out a lot of his statements for now. I would say that, first of all, when it comes to his business record, he was sued by the government for racist practices. His landlord explicitly said that Trump management, which he had day-to-day control of, told him not to rent apartments to Black people in the 70s. And B, he's had over 20 sexual discrimination lawsuits against him in his career, many of which had multiple women stating that he had told them to hire younger and prettier women or fire young women for being fat.
Yeah, so there's a lot in the media that's out about him, and I haven't researched every single accusation in every single case by any means, but I do know that, you know, he was the first to hire female executives for his business before it was even popular to do so in the 80s. I've heard many interviews of women of color, women of different backgrounds and races and origins, and that have come out and spoken to his character, that he have known him for 30 plus years, that have been family friends with him, that have, you know, been friends with one of his children growing up, that say differently. And so I'm very weary to trust the media, and I really look to actually really uncover a certain, it takes a long time. If, you know, if there's 20 different accusations to really trace each of the women, and, you know, I think it's popular to attack the unpopular candidate. I think, you know, when one candidate comes out that 35 years ago, he said this to me, then, you know, it's fashionable and popular for other people to come out and make these claims to make a certain political point. And I'm not discounting quotes that you said, or that, you know, 20 plus sexual harassment cases filed against him. I don't know all of that to really see what I believe. But at the end of the day, a lot of times when I have looked into certain things, I have found that the media will blow things out of proportion to magnify something and really discount a lot of the important information in a certain case. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of contradicting statements. I think that you can find people that say horrible things about him that have known him personally, or will sue him for this or that because he's a wealthy man, you know, who has a lot of businesses. And you'll find people that will say the most amazing things about him. You know, like, there are clips that, you know, there's videos that will never be released to the media because very few media outlets would actually ever cover something like that. But the times that he has stopped in his limo when there was no media around, there was a bystander that recorded this, told his limo driver to stop when this guy is worth like 10 grand an hour. You know, he doesn't have to help anybody. And there's tons of people that would walk by someone's car on fire and calling 911 and helping them, helping a man change a flat tire on the side of the road in his $1,000 Armani suit. You know, the media doesn't capture moments like that, and it's not popular to publicize good things like that about an unpopular candidate. And so I think when you really hear the testimonies of his children, you really hear the testimonies of the executives that he has worked with, that he's provided a great living for and a great healthy work environment for, it's really rare to hear that because it's not sensational and it's not going to give the media great ratings. And so I'm not disagreeing with you in the sense that, again, I would never argue that he is the most moral person. I'm not going to say he's a, you know, Mother Teresa or a Gandhi, because we all know that would be silly to even attempt to claim something like that. He's definitely not. As I mentioned, he is impulsive in his statements. He makes, you know, he'll say things that he later will regret and won't apologize for. But at the end of the day, like, I know for a fact that he is not he's not bought out by anyone. He's not what you see is what you get. He's not being fed a speech. I like that he speaks freely in his press conferences and his speeches. I enjoy seeing the authenticity behind his convictions for a better country. And to I'm just saying, to me, that triumphs something he said 11 years ago that, you know, is saying. Like, I'm not discounting that by any means, but really that's why I voted. If you ask me why I voted for Trump, I voted for Trump because something he said 20 years ago is not going to dictate his tax reform policy. You know, it's not going to dictate how many jobs he's going to bring back to the country through his skill set and through his experience in business. It has no bearing.
Well, okay. Again, there's a lot there, but I would say that, for one thing, there was a lot of media coverage about his children. I was reading the media coverage of the campaign from the beginning, and the media said nothing but beautiful, wonderful things about Ivanka, and that had a huge impact on his campaign. The fact, I mean, honestly, I don't think he would have won without Ivanka, because without her, he would have lost a lot of women who were turned off by his comments about women. But instead, they just looked at his daughter and they saw a beautiful, successful, wonderful person. And I stand by that. She seems wonderful by all accounts. And they said, oh, how could he produce and raise such a wonderful girl if he were a misogynistic person, which doesn't really make any sense, because children are not only determined by their parents. And also, someone can love their own family members and promote good workers at certain points, but still be misogynistic in their business practices and in the way they're going to run the country. And also, it's not about what he said. It's about the fact that, A, people came out and said that he did these things. 16 women said that he did these things. And some of those lawsuits were from the 80s and 90s. So when people argue that, oh, they're just coming out because, you know, it's politically fashionable. They want to say bad things about a wealthy man because it'll get them attention from the press. Even if those kinds of accusations didn't ruin women's lives and make them footnotes in someone else's story, which no one wants to be, then it still doesn't make any sense, because some of them were decades ago. And right, the only way to call those things statements are to disbelieve 16 women over one man.
Right. Or, I mean, and again, I'm not discounting what those 16 women said. I, you know, there might actually be something there. But again, it's really hard for me to believe. I mean, there's a lot of statements that are made about a lot of issues. There's a lot of, you know, statements. It's really easy to find people that will speak to the point that you're wanting them to speak to. It's really easy to take a study and twist it to prove, you know, your point. You know, I'm just going to make a parallel with Planned Parenthood. You know, I can find 16 women by the end of today, that will come out and speak about how, you know, Planned Parenthood has saved their life and how choosing to go through with abortion was the best decision they've ever made, and really compliment the same doctor that they all decided to use and how miraculous that they are. I can also find 16 women in the next hour that will come out and say how it was the worst experience of their life, the biggest regret of their life, and that they were treated horribly and they've all filed malpractice suits. So I think, you know, with a political candidate running for the president of the United States, again, 16 people coming out in a country of 300 million citizens is not, to me, a make it or break it. Should I vote for this candidate or not?
Because you think they're lying.
I'm not saying that they're lying. I haven't read what each and every one of those 16 women have said. I don't know any of those 16 women personally. And I wasn't even alive when they said that these claims actually happened. So to me, they're unfounded. To me, you know, I don't know these women. I haven't read all of their statements. I haven't read all of Donald Trump's statements back to him. But I think, again, when you have a popular figure, whether it's an actor, an actress, you know, a presidential candidate, anyone running for political office, whether it's state level or higher, I mean, I can find 25 claims against our congressman in Arizona, and I can find 25, you know, rebuttals to that. So it's really, I mean,
but then what are you saying, that you can't believe anything? I mean, then what do you choose? How do you choose what to believe? If you don't believe anything the media says, how did you choose what to believe about Hillary Clinton? And I know I'm the one who said that we should limit talk about Hillary Clinton because she's not relevant
right.
in this conversation anymore. But I'm just saying, in the abstract, if you can't believe the media, then whom do you choose to believe?
Well, I'm not saying I don't necessarily believe the media as a whole. I'm just talking about 16 specific women. When it comes to forming an opinion about a certain issue, like with Clinton and what, you know, what happened with her email server, right? Or what happened with, you know, all of the money she charged for speeches. Like, you know, that's publicly released information. So
yeah, but so is the fact that he said on Howard Stern that he walks in on women changing during Miss USA, including teen Miss USA, some of whom were 15 years old. I mean, he is on TV saying this. Like, there are public records on either side. I mean, yes, like Hillary Clinton, there are so many people rebutting that what she did was actually that bad. There are so many official high-ranking people saying that many people have private servers, including Mike Pence.
Right. And so, I mean, I'm not really understanding your question. How do I find out information to form my opinion? I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think that what Donald Trump has said with his mouth, because he is not a tactful person, is worse than what Hillary Clinton would do to this country and how she would affect each and every one of our citizens. So when you, it's not going to form who I vote. Am I going to have him babysit my future four-year-old daughter? Like, probably not. I mean, I wouldn't have any president. I wouldn't have any stranger do that. You know, it would probably be like family and close friends only. Like, I'm not saying that he is this holy, worthy man that deserves praise. I'm just saying that I think he's more fit to be president and to bring the country to where I see the potential of our country and the values that I have of limited government, economic freedoms. Like, to me, that is more important. And so I'm not saying that I stand behind and support, you know, statements that he has made in the past before he was running for president, or even things that he has said and how he has attacked people while he's running for president. But to me, at the end of the day, it's not going to trump, it's not going to overpower his ability to bring this country into the right direction. I really believe he's a patriot. I really believe he has a lot of economically sound ideas to turn our economy around. But to me, those are the important issues. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not saying I'd be friends with him. I probably would invite him over for tea anytime soon. I probably would do that with Ivanka. I think she's awesome. And I'm not saying that she's awesome solely because Donald Trump is her father. But I think, you know, I think he's been a good influence on his children. I think that he's taught them hard work ethic. I think he's provided for his family. I think that, you know, he has taken risks in business and failed. And when you look at every single successful large-scale billionaire business owner, they've failed more times than they've succeeded. And I think that at the end of the day, I think he is a flawed candidate. I think he's a flawed person, but I think he would make the best president of the choices that we had at the time. And so okay. To me, it's just, you know, I feel for, you know, and again, I was the only person in my entire family who voted for Trump. My entire family are Democrats. They're all mm-hmm. Muslim. They're all Democrats. They have no idea. They think that I've totally lost my mind. And I have to accept that. But at the end of the day, I just feel so much peace around that decision because I think of the alternative and I think of like what the impacts of the alternative could have been. And that terrifies me more than anything that Donald Trump can say in his testosterone-filled moments.
Right. Okay. But so let me ask you this question, because I actually, like I said before, I do accept the very broad premise that certain moral defects don't disqualify someone from being a good president or the best, or at least the best candidate out of several candidates. But just one more question, because we are actually almost out of time. This has flown by. But what if you knew for a fact, and I know there's no way that we could know this, but what if you knew for a fact that all of these allegations were true, that he had raped Ivana during their marriage, that he had touched these women without their permission, or you at least, or let's not even say you know all of them are true. Let's just say that you know for a fact that at least one of these allegations are true, that he groped someone without their permission, he sexually assaulted somebody. Would you think that that disqualified him from being president just by virtue of being a heinous crime?
You know, so you're saying if one of those 16, if I knew for a fact, like if I knew that person personally and it happened?
Yeah, or, you know, an oracle came down and told you it was true. Just if you knew for a fact somehow that it were true, then would you believe, like it's kind of the, basically what I'm trying to suss out is do you honestly believe that someone's personal failings, even if they include groping, don't disqualify someone from being president? Or do you just think that this didn't happen?
I have to be really careful how I answer here to make sure that my, you know, morality is not in question. You know, it's a hard question to answer. I think that when you have a successful politician at a state level or higher, and again, I hate to bring about these pessimistic views of mine. To me, it's just reality. It's politics. Politics is a full contact sport. If you want to get to the top and you want to win, at some point you're going to have to abandon. There's going to be a moment that you are, even one moment in your entire career where you have to make a choice that you know is not morally correct. Mm-hmm. And if someone were to tell me that that's false, a congressman or a higher than a congressman or higher, I would call their bluff. And, you know, I think there's a reason that my husband went into the policy side of politics and, you know, does not have any intention to run, because I think at some subconscious level, we all acknowledge that. You know, my husband's in state level politics. We've seen it all. And so I think we have to address that first and foremost, that if you're going to get to a high, if you're going to win a political election, that's a state level election, you know, Senate, Congress, or higher than that, you're going to, at some point, you're going to have to abandon a moral framework of yours or a value of yours to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just start with that. I'll say that of all the presidents that we've had, of all the governors that we've had, of all the congressmen that we've had, I don't think anyone's record is clean. So when I look at a person, even us, even you, you're probably the most, you know, generous, moral person that I know, the kindest soul I've ever met. But I'm sure it would be really hard for anyone walking around this earth to say that I am flawless. You know, I've never let my impulses get the better of me. I've never said something that I didn't mean. I've never disappointed someone. I've never been disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So I think that let's just humanize Trump for one moment and say, you know, there have been numerous politicians that have stolen millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are New York stockbrokers and hedge fund managers that have skimmed millions of dollars. You know, white collar crimes happen on a daily basis with the most quote unquote moral people we know. So I think I look at people as inherently flawed, because we are, you know, we're not God and we're not Jesus. We are all flawed at some level.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I was to look at Trump, almost 70 years old, and there was a claim out there that at one point in his 70 years of life, that he did something, he committed a crime. You know, I think we all know someone, people have had hit and runs and didn't know what to do and freaked out. Is that the right choice to do? Absolutely not. But do their lives deserve? I think people are redeemable. We're flawed, but they're redeemable.
With penance, people are redeemable.
Right. And so again, we're assuming in this situation that there's a claim that is very founded to be factually true. We don't know that yet. We don't know, you know, what Trump believes to be true, I don't know the statements he's made against those claims. So again, like, you know, I don't think either of us can say that he feels this or that because we don't know him personally and we weren't there. Mm-hmm. So I think at the end of the day, I would still, if I had to vote at gunpoint to my head and I had to vote again for the presidential election, I would vote for Donald Trump. And I would do it with a clean conscience. And I would do so because at the end of the day, I still believe he's the best choice for our country. Mm-hmm. I still believe that he is smart, capable. I still believe that he is assertive. And I believe that he loves this country 100 times more and wants the best for this country and actually knows on how to execute his strategies better than his opponent. And to me, that's what a political election comes down to. It doesn't come down to, you know, the background of that person or what they said or what they did or, you know, who likes them and who said this about them in an article. To me, at the end of the day, I have to vote with my conscience. And I know a lot of people, I think 110% of people listening to this would think that I'm nuts because they would think of Donald Trump as the, you know, morally unfavorable choice. But to me, I'm thinking of the future of our country. I'm thinking of the conservative laws that are going to move this country forward. I'm thinking of, you know, living in Arizona on a border state where we see tons and tons of drugs being smuggled into this country, where we have a huge problem at our borders. We have a huge problem in our education system. I think we are in dire need of healthcare reform. We're in dire need of tax reform. And when I think of who is the best person to address these problems so that my children can live an abundant life and live in the most beautiful country, the greatest country that this world has ever seen, to me, I would put my confidence in Donald Trump.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much for your eloquent answers and for talking with me today.
Of course. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share some of my opinions. And I think this is awesome what you're doing. And I think it's great that I just wish more people would allow for just candid, you know, conversations about difficult situations. So I'm really thankful for you and glad that our friendship can weather all the differences that we have.
Me too. I'm so thankful for you and our friendship. Thank you for appearing today.
Of course. Thank you, Janie. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.